is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week. Hello, this is Linda Reevely. Today on Over the Garden Gate, we are visiting Dave Purdy and Alan Stewart, who are the mother and father of KAADLP, who brought us into this program and to making radio, and have been real guiding lights in our experience. So with me today I have Debbie Powell, Alan Stewart, and Dave Purdy. Hi guys, how are you all feeling?
Hello, hello.
We're good. Hi.
Before we get into a lot of conversation, I want to compliment you on your lovely home. It is unique and beautiful and so very special and different from any other home. Did you guys design this place?
It's never been designed. It was accommodated, added on to, revised. We inherited it, we bought it when it was still partially framed by a family who had the McCulloch Chainsaw dealership up here. They'd never built a house. They slabbed all of the structural lumber, including its termites. And there were no two boards that were the same dimension, but they operated off full dimension lumber. So rather than, you know, a 2x4 being less than, it was 2x4. And there were not codes that extended and applied out at this level, this far from town. So that's what we inherited.
Wow.
Since then, we've been rebuilding it.
Well, we built all sorts of stuff.
That's and 50, then all sorts 50 of st- years worth.
Right, and all sorts of stuff fell down and or revised itself or whatever. So I think we were gardeners, and we always had a vision of what it could look like. And that's what kind of motivated it and kept it going, like, oh, it would be so beautiful over there by the blah, blah, if we were to put in whatever. So David's quite correct in that nothing was ever designed. It just happened, and then some other thing happened. And
it was...
we always thought we owned all of Hidden Valley. But turns out others have come along.
But,
yeah. And things have happened to this house. Like there was a big wind in, I think, 2011. And at a certain latitude, trees fell down everywhere. So one tree fell down and crushed the living room, and one crushed this. We had just built this little strange-looking fence of rock, and then another one fell down there. So it was flying trees. But anyhow, yes, this.
I think that thing was called the Gustnado. And it took out interesting parts of Twain Art.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, obviously
it did.
Down here.
Yeah. It did. In fact, Russ Holcomb and Elena Holcomb, who do Sunday Jazz and Don't Touch That Dial and Local History of Yesteryear, had a tree squish their garage just when Elena thought Russ had gone into the garage to make their escape. And, you know, there's a lot of drama.
Oh, yeah.
So we know lots of people with lots of tree drama and have you. Anyhow, so I'm thinking of the first day that we met, and I don't think you were there. I think it was just, or were you both? You were both there.
The first meeting, we were both there. The first day, yeah, I think it was just
right. And we had come to inspect P5 on the Casina campus, and I think we were meeting Jim Garaventa to look at whether it might work as a radio station,
right.
And you guys,
I remember that we were over at the garden.
You were over at the garden, and I don't remember why it was that you came in there.
Well, Jim,
I know Jim.
Jim,
so I came to talk
came
to Jim
to interview us. Well, he actually, at our request, had you guys come over to Knitter News.
And
because one of the earliest parts of the programming was hopefully to be a series of gardens.
Right, right.
And then in walks two master gardeners who actually, we didn't have to talk into doing something because that is what we kind of do, is like, oh, hi, well, you know about whatnot. And they say, oh, yeah, I know about whatnot. And then we say, well, why don't you do a radio show? So we didn't have to do that.
We did kind of jump in, Linda.
You jumped in.
Well,
and
you were manipulated. I wouldn't have told you.
And then I think I said, do you think you could come up with something every week? Oh, yes. And Linda got out a little yellow pad and wrote down 52 things right off the bat. And now you are a little past the second year. And this week's show marks the 100th show.
Yay!
Hooray for this group.
Well,
so it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We have a number of other people who've done lots of shows, but nobody has approximated 100. And, oh gosh, you're listening to our dog, Lundy, who thinks he should be on the inside of the door. So anyhow, yeah, we have a lot of people who maybe do 40 or 50 shows, and they do two or three of them, you know, like 150, but nothing like an interview that happens every week.
Well, 100 shows have been a certain amount of work and a great deal of pleasure, and we've met some lovely people, and we've had some really great experiences doing this.
Absolutely.
And this absolutely dovetails into our reason for being. Master Gardeners, UCCE Master Gardeners, are an educational gardening group, not a regular gardening group.
Right.
Our entire premise is that we are there to educate the public. And so this absolutely fits our requirements too. So it was a perfect mate when we came together.
We were aware of that.
Oh, good.
We have a daughter that graduated from with a master's in UC, from UC Davis, and has been in restoration biology and wetlands biology and so forth with a very distinguished fisheries program. And with her recommendation, plus we have people at the college who, with that program, and we used it ourselves, so
good.
It wasn't an accident,
that is really
nice to think that it's blossomed
right
the way it has.
Why did you guys decide that you wanted to do this radio, you know, project? It's a huge project, and you've devoted endless hours to this. We just can't imagine how much time and effort it took to get this going.
So, well, we had theaters. Built and operated, I think, a total of 14 different theaters in my theatrical construction and administration day. And that's, you know, professional theaters in San Francisco, community theaters, academic theaters. So and that's where Ellen and I met. At a theater in San Francisco State.
And David was my professor. Well, he wasn't actually my professor. He was my advisor. So I got some bad advice, and here I am. You know.
And then somehow or another, the skies opened up and said, you guys should do radio, right?
That's it.
Actually, before then, I had been doing radio with local radio stations as an effort of promoting. We would do musical, we'd do scenes, we'd do, you know, up at the cabin, we'd have a band of, you know, 12, 15 people in Don Lutz's office and do live radio up there, and I would do the write and do the commercials for the theater. And then Ellen became interested in being a voice actress. This was a time when voice acting was pretty expanding.
It was before all the Hollywood stars realized that they could make more money doing audiobooks. So all sorts of people like me were trying to learn how to do that kind of stuff. And then we were sort of shot out of the side. When Meryl Streep wanted to do it instead of Ellen Stewart, she got the job. I don't know how that happened, but
how does that
happen? It was an outrage, but yeah, but anyhow.
So
but,
we did a lot of
it. Yeah, we did some. And then I was part of, and still am part of, the National Audio Theater Festivals, which meets in the Midwest every year. And in fact, I believe that one of our plays that we recorded recently, that was written by Carol Biederman and recorded in our little studio, hopefully is going to play at the National Audio Theater Festival this June. I don't know yet because we haven't submitted that, but they would be crazy to not use it.
They would. Yeah. They absolutely would.
They would. But Linda wants to know how you got the hot idea to do the radio. And I mean, specifically.
Well, in the course of trying to keep afloat after we moved from the Fallon House down to the community, helped us build a 350 seat theater in the old Holman's Foundry. And we had both the antique foundry with the wood heated foundry crucibles still there, and we had the new one. And in the new one, we built a theater. So the idea was to do the radio, which I'd been working locally as a supportive member for the theater. And then a new phenomenon happened, and that was that instead of what was at that time pirate radio, in other words, they were variously, if they weren't licensed, they were competing with, you know, the local licensed radios, and in order to keep them, and by the time the millennium rolled around, all American broadcast 94% was contained within seven companies. So they introduced a means of allowing them to support and underwrite and otherwise use what was heretofore a pirate radio. And there still is one pirate radio. A guy has a backpack transmitter and a bicycle in the Berkeley Hills, and he rolls around, and they have never run him to ground.
Oh, love it. That would be a good story.
It is a good
story. That would be a good story to actually do for radio.
In 2013, an opportunity, FCC opened up an opportunity to apply for a license. And there was
in 2000.
Well, yeah, if we
want
to backtrack
that
point. We missed the boat in 2000.
I was sick. We were doing the theater. We had the opportunity to apply. They opened it up for less than 3 weeks and had almost 2,800 applicants nationwide, cut it off, and it's the most involved licensing you can imagine. Oh. And the idea was to make it a means of competing with the narrowing of production in this country.
So the whole corporate world of radio does have this, well, the corporate world of radio is one thing, and community radio across the nation is alive and thriving because the FCC did agree to this idea of having some licenses that only very rarely are on offer. And I think the year 2000 was the first year, and then I think 2010 was another year, and then 2013 comes along, and I was part of the Arts Alliance at the time, and still am, and they allowed us to use their 501c3 status, because we had to be a nonprofit for more than 3 years in order to do that.
So, we had actually made that suggestion to an existing, the Senior Youth Partnership up here. And
I'm on that board too. So you see where being on what boards do for you. They mm-hmm. allow you to get stuff rolling. Anyhow, through their support, we were able to get the license and found out in early 2014 that we had a license. And we thought,
woohoo!
Now what we do? And in 2013, when we made that application, there were only 3 weeks during which time you could do it. And David was deathly ill in Stanford, and I would each day carry in all these files to Stanford, and we would sort of maybe try to write the application, and it looked really hopeless. And then the really cool thing is the government shut down, and we got an extra 3 weeks. And meanwhile, our daughter was starting a new business in Joshua Tree National Park, and her business was decimated by the first shutdown that had come along.
Of course, yeah.
But a little good comes along and a little bad, and the little good in our case was that we got enough time that we could make that application. And in February of 2014, it was awarded the right to, what was it called, a permit to construct, I think. And so we took the permit to construct and began to think about, well, what...
Well, we knew.
Well, we kind of knew. Yeah. Maybe you knew better than I, because I didn't know anything. I hope you knew better than I, because I did not know anything. And off we went working on it. And that took a pretty long time. And so after 18 months, you had 18 months to do it. After 18 months, minus about a month, it was clear we weren't going to be ready. So we re-upped for another year and a half. And that was due to expire February 4th, 2017. So on January 29th, 2017...
You went on the air.
We went on the air.
I remember. I remember.
Breathlessly, with not much to spare. And that was kind of where it got rolling. And since that time, there have been all kinds of wonderful people that have come along. And there were a number right from the get-go, and you guys were in on the ground floor. And we have been adding since that time, and it just keeps flourishing.
I think it is flourishing, and it's lovely to watch how it grows and how people with some very specialized interests manage to make wonderful radio.
Yeah.
And it's exciting, and some of the people who are participating now, I think, are just turning out first rate, super helpful, community-oriented things. And I'm really fond of your relationship with the high school.
We are too.
Because I think that's really working well, and it's fun to see those kids creating shows.
Well, this last Friday, we just completed a seven-week course, meeting daily with 8 Casina High students. And we didn't quite finish the show, so at 1 o'clock I'm running down there today, and there are 3 that want to go on and do some more radio. So we'll see where that goes. And so it's being treated as a class for them, and which means I actually have to show up.
Yes, it does. But, having been a teacher in high school level for a long time.
So they're going to finish this is their second episode. They did their first episode a couple weeks ago. And the first group was called Bark of the Bulldog. Because they're bulldogs.
A year and a half ago.
That was a year and a half ago.
And the first one.
So I suggested to them we could be Bark of the Bulldog or something else. This time they weren't stuck with that. And one kid said, I think we should be Bite of the Bulldog. So this year we are Bite of the Bulldog. He also thought we should be Wine of the Bulldog. So we decided that wasn't as good. So we're going to do Bite of the Bulldog. So that little show will be coming along soon. And maybe more from them. And it's really fun to see they invented DJ names. And we got a guy named Big J and Tech.
That stuff's great.
Somebody else.
I think it gives young people particularly, and some of us older people as well, a kind of way to do some very expressive kind of stuff and to get information that we think is important out to a community.
Yes.
Now, KAAD is an LP station. Can you explain what LP means? It isn't liquid propane, believe me.
No, it's not.
No.
It's called LP because it's low power. It has a maximum generating power of 100 watts. And think about a light bulb. A 100 like watt light bulb.
Big light bulb.
Burns out. All right. Well,
it could be bigger.
And they adjust that to account for a hat, which is the height above average terrain. And therefore, if we went up, for instance, to Telegraph Hill, to Big Hill, and broadcast from that elevation, expanding our broadcast range, we would be limited to, say, 7.5 watts.
Yeah, brought right down in power.
Right.
Right.
So what we really have is a limit, depending on which direction we're focused, a broadcast range of 2 to 12 miles. We have the right at some point to add repeaters. We can ally with other radios, and so there's a lot of open-endedness. Actually, the gap in the mountains that aims down towards Merced, we apparently broadcast quite a ways there.
Oh, and, that's interesting.
And we have a major audience of turkeys, Hereford cows, and
it's a little short on
if we can find what
audience
they like,
members.
You know,
hawks are not big participatory listeners.
One of our biggest challenges is getting people to think radio on the internet. You know, like I can listen to those guys on the internet. If you've got an internet, you can listen to us. I mean, that's
right.
But that's the biggest challenge, I'd say, in terms of building an audience is, oh yeah, but people don't necessarily think that way. And so,
right.
You know, it's a retraining process.
We have, in our training classes and in our meetings in both this county and Calaveras, been heavily promoting the fact that you can get this on the internet, which people were quite pleased about. That seemed to be, that
was
like giving
a real reserve
gift.
Because otherwise,
and
you can use your library mm-hmm. by invitation, I guess.
Right.
But this is a local library that's much more specific.
That's right.
You're speaking of the Master Gardener.
Yes,
Master
Gardener.
Right.
And then recently, and we were so delighted to finally get this accomplished, we got our programs archived. And it took us, 3 hours to go through every single program and name it properly so it could be accessed mm-hmm. in the archives. But we did it, and we think the archives are just a major gift.
I'm glad you do.
Right.
From the get-go.
We have a list of intentions that
very,
are so
very
long.
Lengthy, yeah. One thing that will, I think, dovetail with you guys is we've been throughout our period looking for a storefront to offer some, if not all, of our programming in, so that we have the visuals, people can stop in and actually have questions and answers and have have speakers that do low broadcast there.
I may be flying by the seat of my pants here, but I noticed that Arts Alliance has just moved into a new facility
in
South Washington.
And Lizette Sweetland, who's the executive director, when I said, well, this might be a good window for the radio, she said, mm-hmm. She was a little busy doing other things, so I'm not sure that that was a full-on absolutely or what, but I think we'll probably appear down there from time to time, if
I
not
think
frequently.
Lizette is a wonderful and certainly gracious hostess. Mm-hmm. I have known her since she was, I think 15.
Yes. Is she one of your students?
She was. Yeah. Uh-huh. Several times one of my TAs. I'm just super fond of her.
Yeah.
And I think that she will probably, when she's not totally overwhelmed with getting into that new space, probably be very willing to let us have, once every 2 weeks or once a week where we just have a speaker or two there and the availability for the public to come and see what it is we're doing.
I think that's a great idea.
I think that could be really fun. And it's such a great location.
Well, you know, for instance, you could have a live Master Gardeners show down there, and people who are walking through town say, oh my goodness, my camellias are turning yellow. I'm going to stop right, on the corner here and find out
what to do.
Yeah, but that would be an ideal kind of
community. It would, and the location is really good. A little
it's
bit
fabulous.
Of signage and doing things on Saturday, and we would undoubtedly have a lot of...
Right.
Oh, and you know what would be really fun? Would be to put a speaker outside.
Well, that's what we were just
saying. Yep, right. That would be good to annoy all sorts
the
of people walking by.
Yeah, I'll love it.
Well, and you remember when Curly and various of the old-time Italian farmers that came here, whose people came in the 70s,
1870s, yes.
And they would have contests on the biggest garlic, biggest elephant garlic, largest tomato, biggest zucchini, and they would be in Mundorf's window, and, Curly would say, you think that's big? Look at this zucchini. It took four of us to bring it in.
Do you do that at the Master Gardener's garden?
Could be a...
We generally don't encourage people to grow giant vegetables other than
they're not
other
that
than
good.
Competitive pumpkins.
Right.
Competitive pumpkins.
Really, a giant zucchini is worth about as much as you can carve it out and make a canoe for your children.
That's right.
Which is not a bad.
Which can be done with those things. They last a little while, then they say.
Yes.
But we certainly could think about that. And we could think about coming up with, say, a selection of different or original kinds of vegetables.
Sure.
For instance, I have become completely obsessed with rutabagas.
Yeah.
Why?
That's what we used to learn about.
Because rutabagas they have very little taste of their own. They have nice natural sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't want to eat a lot of carbohydrates, they make the most perfect noodles you've ever run into.
Noodles? I was thinking mashed potatoes, but...
Well,
we make mashed rutabaga and carrots, which is delicious.
Okay.
And thin that out, make soup with it as well. We had, for Christmas, Yukon Gold potatoes mashed with rutabagas.
Mm.
Oh, it was so good.
That sounds really good.
Delicious.
That's what we lived on in the south of England.
The rutabagas. They're lovely.
We'd never had a rutabaga.
Swedes.
Are rutabagas the same as Swedes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Swedes.
Well, maybe I don't hate rutabagas.
You like Swedes?
Well, I remember eating a lot of Swedes.
We ate a lot.
Did you eat the leaves?
No.
The leaves are yummy.
Kind of like a beet leaf or something?
Kind of like a beet leaf with just a little bit more texture and a little bit more sweetness. They make a wonderful green.
Well, one of the unusual vegetables that we grew, I think, were kohlrabis. And they're probably not really unusual, but
I love kohlrabis. They look like something from outer space.
They do look like an alien landing sort of thing.
Oh, Sputnik.
I don't remember what we even did with the kohlrabis, but we did something. Yeah. Did we boil them or bake them? Or what?
You can eat them raw. And you can
I think I put them in stew. I would chop them up in stew.
That's you guys are infinitely fascinating, and it's so much fun to come and talk to you.
You can come anytime.
Very few people think we're
fascinating, so,
Well, I just think they haven't asked you any questions, because it's just amazing.
Bed garden.
Yeah, we'd like to talk to you about your garden sometime.
Share it with
us. Right, if we ever get one going again.
Thank you for spearheading the whole radio idea, getting it going. Teaching people how to do it. You guys have been the best, and we are so appreciative.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We really are.
And we appreciate your spreading the word and your 100
do.
Shows. And here's to another 100.
Thank you. Yay!